So, it being, I used to believe, but I've given it all up. Well, our beliefs change over time, don't they? Like, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes our beliefs change for questionable reasons. So I asked some of my friends recently what they used to believe, but have now given up. There's one. My friend Claire, she used to believe that all cats were girls and all dogs were boys. You could see why. Cats are kind of gross. My friend Emma, she used to believe that if you didn't stretch after exercise, you got gangrene. Gosh. Lily used to believe that it was a legal requirement that your husband had to be taller than you. I don't know if she knew that before, knew of her error before marrying 6'3" Richard. My friend Sarah believed that the whole world used to be in black and white in the olden days. My friend Marco, he believed that if villages and towns were twinned, they were identical. Like, it's wonderful to think through. Like, are the people also identical? Like, it's fun to think. I once met a lady who didn't believe in Sri Lanka. And, you know, a grown woman, I think she was doing a PhD at Loughborough. Fascinating, really interesting, her reasons why she didn't believe that something she couldn't see couldn't exist. Well, sometimes our beliefs change, sometimes they ought to change, and sometimes changing our beliefs is an excellent thing. So each of us here have changed our beliefs over time, and such is the nature of belief that we think our new beliefs are better and more warranted than our former beliefs. We believe them because we think they're true. So I'm a Christian. I believe in God. I believe that the Bible is the word of God. I believe in life after death. I believe that Jesus is God the Son. Of course, other people don't believe what I believe. Perhaps you don't believe what I believe. Many of the people that I love most in the world don't believe what I believe. And that includes a vast majority of my family. And I respect them. I just want to check I'm heard on that from the beginning. That other people do not believe what I believe. And believing as I do that my beliefs are true, I'm persuaded that their beliefs are untrue. And that doesn't stop us being friends. It oughtn't stop us being friends. We're able to disagree agreeably. And I'm sure that's the case this evening, that like in this and in the question and answer session, that we can just talk about whatever, you can ask whatever you like, and then we can leave here having learned from one another. I don't have all the answers. I think people who think they have all the answers are insufferable. But we can work through it together. One friend that I have learned a lot from is Ibrahim. Some of you have met him. Ibrahim believes that Jesus was a Muslim. I do not. I believe that Jesus died on the cross. Ibrahim does not. We believe different things. And we are friends. I think of my friend Tom. Tom believes in reincarnation. And I've asked him why, and he has a really interesting theory, like a really interesting reason for his belief. I read about another man called Dave, and he said he used to believe in reincarnation, but he says that was a long time ago in another life. Beliefs about God are not in some separate category. Sometimes our beliefs change for good reasons. Sometimes our beliefs change about God for bad reasons. My friend Katrina used to believe that there is no God. And then in her 30s, she gave up that belief and is now part of this church. My friend Kester used to believe that Jesus never existed. And then he went to Leicester University and he met up with some Christians and he's now part of this church. Others have given up belief in God. That might be you. And each story here is different. I don't want to kind of simplify, flatten things this evening. I read of someone this week who said, well, I used to believe in God, But nothing that I prayed for ever happened. Maybe that's your story. The worst story I read this week reads, I used to believe in God until I was beaten, until my best friend died, until my mother walked out, until I was molested, until I was alone and suicidal. Now, I hope that's nothing like your story, but you can see kind of, can you try and get into that mindset of someone, that's their story. They used to believe in God, but now all this rubbish stuff has happened. Now, that's a really sad story. And stories like that throw up questions to us about God's kindness and his power. And we ought to ask questions like that. There's no kind of party line that we have to toe that we aren't allowed to ask hard questions. You can ask hard questions this evening. We can come back to some of that in the Q&A if you like. So I really questioned God as a teenager. I didn't particularly question his existence, but I did question his character. So I was a bit like my friend Lauren. She said that she used to believe that women didn't matter much to Jesus or in the Bible. And I thought that the Bible taught that too. Neither of us believe that anymore, but I remember telling my mother how horrible she was for believing the Bible. I remember her crying, and I also remember that she couldn't answer my questions. And looking back now over like nearly 13 years of reading and studying the Bible, I can see that what I said about the Bible was really very unfair. You can imagine my tone was bad, but my understanding of the Bible was also warped. But I couldn't see that at the time. But then no one seemed to be able to answer my questions. There was no one I felt. Well, I spoke to people, but didn't really go anywhere. And I think, if you think of this week, I think as a teenager, I was really let down by the church. Maybe you've been let down. Maybe you've been hurt. My friend Amy, she's now a minister in the Church of Scotland, but she grew up in an atheistic stroke Buddhist house. And she says that when she thinks of friends who have walked away from their Christian faith, she thinks it is mostly because people and churches have hurt them or let them down. And they have mistaken that God is doing the same. So look, I don't know whether it means anything for me to say, but as a church leader, but if you have been let down or you've been hurt or outright wronged by a Christian or a church, I'll say sorry. Don't know whether you could take that from me. But the Bible makes it clear that God hates injustice. Like, he really hates it. And so if you're hurting, God says, that's not okay. And to the people who hurt you, he says, that's not okay. So I'm not going to try and bring much of an answer on this, because stories are also different to one another. But I will just confess that churches are full of broken people, imperfect people, because they're full of people, and people are imperfect. And so if you've left a church because you've been hurt, and you happen to find a perfect church, can I ask you not to go? Because you'll ruin it, won't you? Because you're not perfect either. None of us are. Of course, that doesn't make it any less painful if you've been sinned against, but it does give us a bit of a new perspective, I think. And we can, again, explore more of that in Q&A if you've got questions about that. If you used to believe that hurt is what led you to give up, then I think you're part of a large and a wounded company. There is a larger group, though, And I'll spend most of my time left on this group and one other. The largest group, I think, and just to remind you, we're thinking about, I used to believe, but I've given it all up. I think the largest group here are those who have given up their beliefs for no reason at all. That might sound like a strange thing to say. I think the largest group are people who have given up their beliefs for no reason at all. I don't just mean religious beliefs here. I think for all of us, regarding all sorts of things, our beliefs change, and sometimes they change, and there's no rhyme or reason behind it. So I think of one of my favorite authors. He used to think that God was made up, but then he gave up that belief at age 29 and became a Christian shortly after, C.S. Lewis. So his beliefs, like all of us, changed over time. Beliefs about God, beliefs about the world, whatever. And then he wrote, I should have put this on a slide, he wrote that the difficulty of continuing to believe is constantly ignored. And he says, it's always assumed that difficulties of belief are intellectual difficulties, that a man who has once accepted something will automatically go on believing it until he has real grounds for disbelief to occur. And he says, nothing could be more superficial. And he says, how many freshers who come up to university from religious homes and lose their Christianity in the first year have been honestly argued out of it? Or he says, how many sudden temporary losses of faith that we have a rational basis which would stand up for a moment? And he goes on to emphasize this isn't just true with religious beliefs, it's all beliefs. So he's writing this during the war, and he says that on some days he would feel optimistic about the war, like, yeah, we're going to win. And other days he would feel pessimistic. And yet it's more likely to be down to something like the weather. But of course, that doesn't affect who's winning. Our beliefs are sometimes, for no reason at all, they change. I think I do this a lot myself. Jonathan Edwards, the triple jump world record holder, he used to believe in God, but he gave it up. And he says this, I just stopped believing in God. And I don't think it was anything more complicated than that, he said. Now, I don't know him, and that's just a one-liner from him. But as it stands, isn't it curious? If I'd said that I just stopped believing that Sri Lanka existed, or we could take something less physical. If I suddenly said, my mother doesn't love me anymore, wouldn't that invite the question, well, but why, Matthew? Why have you changed your view on this? I mean, I don't know your mother. I don't know whether she loves you or not. But this sudden change of belief must be grounded in something, surely. My little brother is 30 on Wednesday. He and our big brothers, we grew up in a Christian home. We were all baptized as babies. We were confirmed in the faith as teenagers. And if you had asked us 25 years ago if we believed in God, all of us would have said yes. But now I'm the only one of the four of us who goes to church, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who would self-identify as a Christian. Well, I texted my little brother a few weeks ago, and I more or less said, hey, I'm doing a talk in a few weeks on people who used to believe but gave it all up. Isn't that basically you? What's your story? I wasn't quite as stark and awkward as that, but he was gracious in his reply to what he and I both agreed was a bit of a full-on text message. And he sent me a long text back, including the line, as for believing now or back when I was younger, I would struggle to answer both of those. And then there followed 250 thoughtful words before the conclusion, But that is the most I've thought about it, possibly in my entire life. So that, I imagine, says a lot, he said. And it does say a lot, doesn't it? 250 words. That's the most he's thought. And I'm not bashing him here, especially as I might send him the link to this talk. He's a handsome fellow, much like his older brothers. So without being harsh about it, it does say a lot that his beliefs are what they are and perhaps have changed without him having really thought about it. And actually, I find that most people that I speak with who have abandoned belief in God, they haven't had a crisis moment of change. They've not sat down and examined their beliefs. They've not been argued out of them. They've just, like Jonathan Edwards, they've just stopped believing in God. I find that really interesting. Belief in the Bible is similar. I speak with many people, and hundreds of them, I've spoken with hundreds of people who have told me, I don't believe the Bible. I just don't believe it. They just don't. And I'm speaking a little more broadly now because most of the people I'm speaking about never did believe the Bible in the first place. And maybe that's you. But of these hundreds, I've perhaps only met three who have actually read the Bible for themselves as adults. So they've not read it, but they know they don't believe it. Again, I'm not really bashing that, really. I mean, I was just like that before I went to university. I hadn't read the Bible, but I was writing a book about the Bible, and my book was going to be a knockdown argument of why you shouldn't believe the Bible. And then I got to uni, and I met with people who had actually read it and had reasons for what they believe. The comedian Lee Mack, he was interviewed on Radio 4's Desert Island Discs last year. If you're not familiar with it, it's a radio program and people get interviewed about their life. And they choose 8 records that they would take with them to a desert island if they were to be all on their own. And then they're asked at the end, what one luxury would you take and what one book would you take? But so that everyone doesn't say the same books, they said, you automatically get the Bible and you automatically get works of Shakespeare. And he picked up on the fact that you'd also have the Bible. And he said, I'm glad you get the Bible because I would read the Bible. I think it's quite odd that there are people like myself in their 40s who quite happily dismiss the Bible, but they've never read it. I always think if an alien came down and you were the only person they met and they said, what's life about? What's Earth about? Tell us everything. And you said, well, there's a book here that purports to tell you everything. Some believe it to be true. Some people do not believe it to be true. Wow, what's it like? And you go, I don't know. I've never read it. It would be an odd thing, wouldn't it? He's not a Christian. I don't think he's read the Bible yet. But it is an odd thing to believe something without first having thought about it. It's odd just to drift into belief. I think this is the same for Christians. I think Christians ought to doubt more. And by me, I mean I'm ripping off someone called Timothy Keller. But he writes that Christians ought to doubt more. Why? There are good questions. There are hard questions. And if Christians don't think these questions are hard, then you've not really thought them through very well. You know, we ought to ask ourselves, why is it that I believe what I believe? But that's the first thing I want to draw major to. I think that many people don't believe, and it's for no reason at all. The second and the last one is kind of a beneath the surface reason that they both are. It's a strange one, being basically one of inconvenience. Let me just flick off that. Not believing because it's inconvenient. Just giving up beliefs. Now, that sounds strange. I wonder whether you're with me yet on that. It sounds strange as if no one would just give up a belief or take a belief because of convenience. But I think actually all of us are in danger of doing that at times. So let me explain. I've been asked thousands of questions over the last few years, often by people who say that they used to believe in God, but they no longer do. And I've often asked them back, they're asking, let me be more specific, they're saying, I used to believe, but I gave up belief when nobody could answer such and such question. And often they are excellent questions that they're asking. Often they're questions I have myself and that I can't give a good answer to. But then I've sometimes asked them, look, that's a really good question. I've not got a great answer, but may I just ask, is this the key thing for you? Is this why you don't believe? Like, if you got a good answer to this, would you then follow Jesus? And nobody has ever said yes. You see, they say they don't believe because of such and such, but the real reason very often lays elsewhere. And again, I'm not standing above such folk. I'm sure if you push me hard enough during question time, you might find similar inconsistencies. Feel free to do so. But I'd like us to consider if this might be the case for us and to confess to ourselves that sometimes our presenting reasons might be different from the actual reasons. There's a story of a man, you may have heard this, who went up to his church pastor and said, Pastor, I don't believe in God anymore. And a pastor, he's a brave man, he asked, when did you start sleeping with your girlfriend? Do you see what he's asking? What has made belief in God suddenly inconvenient to you? Now, we don't have time to try and cover every reason that someone might give up belief in God, but it's this matter of inconvenience. We're just going to consider for the last few minutes before Q&A, and then we can try and cover some of the things that I've not even tried to address yet. But this inconvenience thing, I'm keen for us to discuss it because, as I said, it's, I think, one of these underlying reasons that we're sometimes not really aware of. Few people are candid enough to say, yeah, I did used to believe, but I gave it up when following Jesus became inconvenient. But we're going to look at a story now from the Bible where pretty much that happens. Now, there's some pink Gospels there. If you could, Mark, can you frisbee one to me? Thank you. And then flick to page 30. You can keep these, you can take them away. Flick to page 30. And this story is about a man called Lazarus, and he's died when we join the story. And it's about Jesus, who comes to the tomb 4 days later, after his friend has died. And Jesus is emotional. You've got the shortest verse in the Bible in verse 35, the little number 35 there, just says Jesus wept. But look on past that to verse 38. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of those who are standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And now the next 5 words are astonishing. The dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth round his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Now, I'd love you just to see the various reactions here to this amazing miracle. Verse 45, therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. This was like a religious council. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here is this man, Jesus, performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. And look down with me to sentence number 53. From that day on, they plotted to take his life. Now, can you see, do you follow the story? Like, can you see the link of what I'm saying? Jesus performs an awesome miracle, and as a result, many believe in him. But then you get this Sanhedrin, this religious council, and they can't deny that Jesus has done this amazing miracle. They don't even try to deny it. But they don't want people to believe in Jesus because politically they think that could be a disaster for them. We see them in chapter 12 plotting to kill Lazarus to stop people coming and seeing him and then hearing this story. Now, this is just a really obvious example that came to my mind of bias in belief. It's really transparent, and I don't think any of us are quite so transparent as that when we've got bias in our belief. But I would have us all, Christians, non-Christians, examine ourselves. Could our beliefs be merely convenient? Are they actually true? John says he writes this book just near the end, in a penultimate chapter in 20, verses 30 and 31. He says that he's one of the friends of Jesus, and he said that Jesus did many other miraculous signs besides the ones recorded in this book. But then he says, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, that by believing in him you may have life in his name. And so that's, I'm keen, if you like, you can take this home. You can look at it. And here we have the same kind of evidence that the people in the first century were looking at. This is what Jesus did. These are reasons to believe. And we see some people coming to believe, giving up their old beliefs. And others refusing to give up their beliefs when faced with the evidence. And I'd just finish with that challenge for all of us, Christian, non-Christian. Are we brave enough to challenge ourselves with new evidence and to think through potential biases ourselves? So that's me, that's my blathering on bit done. But next comes, I think, what is usually the most interesting part of evenings like this. Do join in with a will. You can ask what you like about what I've just said or anything else. Or just some really obvious things that I've not covered about why people might give up beliefs. Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought that while, like, typing out notes on this. No, those groups, I think, do go together very well, that often when people say that there isn't a reason they've given up faith, there often is because of the inconvenience of Jesus being my king rather than myself being my king. It reminds me of a book I read a couple of years ago. An atheist friend of mine, one of the kind of newer militant sorts of atheist, he said, "You've got to read this book," which I can't remember its exact title, but it was basically why I became an atheist. And he was a Christian minister before. He trained with a Christian called William Lane Craig. So he's kind of a Christian philosopher, speaks for the truth of Christianity. This guy trained with him and then lost faith. And I was actually really perversely excited about reading this book, because I'm thinking, this guy knows stuff. This guy knows probably what I know and more. He's just better trained in everything I've thought about. Because I've read lots of books of that sort that just are kind of schoolboy arguments and are just disappointing, really. come on, let's have a like proper conversation here. But I really wasn't surprised to read early on in the book that, yes, so when I wanted to leave my wife, and live with another woman, I suddenly realized that Christianity is for stupid people. Like, and then he has these 400 pages that, they were dull because they were poor. And so his presenting things, he wasn't saying, like we had Jonathan Edwards there saying, I just gave up belief. He was saying, I gave up belief because, you know, the Bible is untrue, because God is a monster, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so I think that's, I agree, yeah. Yep.
Now, I think we need to be fairly candid about that, and the reasons why there's that inconsistency and that jarring are complex and many aren't there. So that's what I mean about maybe to do with what and how you've been taught, or how people work out their beliefs and their faiths, the influence of the people around you on how you live. But certainly those inconsistencies are there. And I think we're basically flawed, aren't we? To God empty-handed and with more understanding, and what little understanding we glean from God is purely a gift of grace from Him, because He wants us to know Him and to love Him and delight in Him. But I think when you forget that that's where God is, and that God wants you in relationship with Him, and you come across these inconsistencies, and life is hard, and everyone experiences life being hard, that's when you can give up, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I think that anyone, I'm reticent to point fingers and blame, it that seems quite an unkind response to that, but maybe that as a community of believers is something we need to be aware of, and not to, it's hard, it's easy to be glib, isn't it? It's hard not to be glib on them.
Yeah, I agree, and I think the church needs to be candid with one another, open and honest with one another about struggles and doubts and about disappointments as well, because then if we come up against a thing we really struggle with in life, sin or suffering, whatever, and then we've got the idea from maybe from Christian leaders not being honest from the pulpit about what we should expect the Christian life to feel like and to look like and what it achieves. I mean, that early thing I said earlier, I used to believe in God, but my prayers weren't answered. Now, it would be a shame, wouldn't it, if people in our church kind of espouse that. Like if someone, you'd want to come back gently and say, well, were they answered no? And then struggle with them of, but why would God answer no? Because what I was praying for is clearly such a good thing, maybe a kind thing to others. I'm not just praying that I get gold for breakfast. I'm praying, please save this poor child from dying. And then we can't just go, ah, yeah, but, you know, God's in charge of everything, and God's all groovy. And it's like, yeah, but can we just weep about this together? Like, this sucks. I think the part of the church there is honesty, candor.
Do you think maybe the freedom just for some things in faith to be a question?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've...
Before you retract, you can somehow figure out all the answers.
Yeah.
God's, of course,
inevitably. Yeah. Yeah, so we don't need to know all the answers. When I used to work with students, I used to meet with the Bible study leaders, and then they met with their small group Bible study people. And we would discuss things, me and the leaders, and they would feel, no, I can't go and do this on my own because I'm not sure of the answers on this. And even where I maybe thought I knew something more of an answer, I was happy just to say, that's okay, just tell them you don't know. Like, maybe tell them that maybe nobody knows. Like, I would even, and I feel kind of mixed about this, we'd look at Bible passages and Jesus would say something, and I would say, you know, that's never been that persuasive to me. I just don't really follow Jesus' logic here. And I think, you know, gotta be careful there that we don't then just leave people going, oh my goodness, Jesus didn't know what he's saying. No. I'm sure Jesus knew what he was saying. But it needn't be that I have to understand him in order for it to make sense. And I'm happy to trust him. As a child should hopefully trust their parents, even though they don't understand why they should brush their teeth or not wee into electric sockets or whatever children do nowadays. Yeah. That'd be terrible.
Is there one of the your thoughts on kind of this? I think the first category, the first guy you mentioned, were you sort of talked about being let down, being hurt. So I guess the sort of the sharp end of
Yeah, so keeping those two together, because you don't want to just say, yeah, that's really hard, and walk away, or just weep with them, but you do want that, but then how do you also, and how quickly, and can you then say, but actually, even though it's hard, that isn't necessarily a reason not to believe in God. I feel we probably too quickly flip onto the, okay, enough of this emotional stuff. Just think about this properly for a second. Your hurt doesn't disprove God. It's like, boom. It's like, thanks. I don't want to follow your God anyway, even if he is there. Yeah. Yeah, very difficult. I don't know. Any thoughts? Yeah. And that question, I think, question about suffering, is God, is if God is powerful, if God is good, why does he allow suffering? I think it's one of the hardest. I was down at our local park recently, and I was speaking to a lady with a dog, and she was very old, and her husband had died the last winter, and she said, why would God allow that? That's her question, just about that. And I gave her a Gospel of John, and we turned to this story together, and we went to that shortest verse of Jesus wept, and just like showing her a God who knows what it is to lose a loved one. So Jesus doesn't, in John chapter 11, give some smackdown argument about suffering. There is something in John 11, not to go into now, I'll just leave that. But that's that. The bit that I'd go to with a Christian in John 11 to talk about suffering is not the bit I went to her then, the first time we met. But I think there are good answers. And I think I think no answers could be even worse. And I'll tell a story, and some of you might not like the story, but there's... Someone was speaking to a guy called Alec Mateer. He's a Christian, and said, you know, if someone came to you and their child had died, would it not just be best to say to them, like, God didn't want this. If God could have done something, you know, but it's down to us, it's free will. Like, and he's like, oh my goodness, that would be the worst thing in the world to say to a grieving parent. Like, I've lost my child, and God's out of control and can't do anything, and there's no purpose to this. It's all darkness and grief. There is nothing in this. I think that's kind of a counsel of despair. So I think some false conclusions that lady in a park with a dog could come to are worse. And actually, I think the more compassionate thing to do would be to help her think through how it is that a good God... we've had a whole evening on that before, haven't we? On suffering. But I wouldn't want to leave someone without a biblical answer, because I'm convinced that a biblical answer is the most comforting, and it's best for us and most glorifying to God. But how much can you do meeting a lady in a park? Yeah, I don't know. Any comeback on that or anything else? Like, not to trivialize things, but, you know, I was praying last night fervently that England would beat Wales. It just seems so obvious to me that would be better. I don't know. I don't mean to trivialize things, but, you know, to me, you know, that... I prayed more about that than I do for the poor, you know? That moved my heart more. I'm a terrible person. But let me just confess that. You know, certain things move my heart less than they should, and other things move my heart more than they should. Now, prayer's weird. We're weird. Any other thoughts? Mark?
Do you actually think that people want an answer? It is the answer, the real thing? question behind the question. Like, if there was, like, an answer, would that actually get them to a better place?
Do people want an answer?
Or do you just have to show them who Christ is and show them, you know, his passage through time and his purposes?
I think it's a yes and a no, and that sounds rubbish, but we have longings for answers. So say with pain. Or say with, you know, I have longings, great longings for whatever it may be, that I want to be satisfied. And then I might look to something less than God to satisfy them, and they don't satisfy me. Where do I then go? I think there is, I think some people do end up just like, well, they are searching. So I think people really do want an answer, but then when they get close to the answer, I think then it could be inconvenient. I don't know. I've not said that very well. I think even with myself, okay, I know that God is a fountain of all blessing, and he is what gives me my ultimate good. I think that all the things I want, all the good things I want, all the illegitimate things that I want, wherever there's a good desire buried in there, I think God satisfies that ultimately. And yet, even though I know that answer, I'm convinced by that, I'm pretty certain the Bible teaches that, I'm still tempted to chase after lesser things. Now, what's going on there? Because I'm deliberately cheating myself. That's madness. I don't really understand that in my heart, because I know the answer. You know, I'm tempted. Shall I sin? Shall I not sin? Not sinning will give me more pleasure, but sinning will give me less pleasure. I'm going to sin. What's that? I don't get that. I think that's got to be in the same area that we're talking about. Do people want an answer? I think false answers are easier, quicker, more coated in sugar.